from text 26. The glories of devotional service to Krishna. And in this section, Krishna's glorifying pure devotional service, and he describes how such pure service is very simple, and one receives a super excellent result in three verses, 26, 27, 28, 29, and 30 to 31. He describes how he shows favoritism to his devotee, how the devotee becomes dear to him. And in the last three verses, he describes how all persons can be purified by devotional service. In other words, it's very potent. So, okay, well, let's begin from 26 now. Patram pushpam phalam toyam yo me bhaktya prayacchati tadaham bhaktyuparitam ashnami prayatatmanaha. If one offers me with love and devotion a leaf, a flower, fruit, or water, I will accept it. So now Krishna was describing those who worship the demigods in previous verses. So to worship the other demigods, one must endeavor so much. But to just worship Krishna, one simply has to offer something very simple. And so one can just offer something simple in this way, given in this verse. A leaf, a flower, fruit, or water. Doesn't have to be some elaborate puja. Right? And Krishna uses the singular declension in these words. He doesn't say patrani, pushpani, phalani, which he could have said. But he says, just one leaf, one fruit, one drop of water. So it's very simple. Anyone from any class, if the person may be very poor, he can worship Krishna. So the offering itself, in and of itself, is not so important, but it's the love and devotion in which it's offered. So that must be offered with a heavy weight of love, the Lord says. And he expresses that by the word bhakti, which is used twice in this verse. Because usually to say bhakti twice in a verse is not considered very good. So so he says it twice to stress that the offering must be made with devotion. Then I accept it. So bhaktiya also indicates how the Lord reciprocates the mood of whoever offers him something with love. So his reciprocation is not dependent on the external quality of what is offered. But Krishna says something may not be impressive in and of itself, but when my devotees offers it in devotion, with the expectation that I will enjoy it, then that gives me great pleasure. So in this regard, I make no discrimination as to the external quality of the offering. So now you may say that, well, I don't really have devotion, so does it mean I cannot offer anything? But here Krishna is saying that at least the person should feel excited that Krishna will like this offering. So then in that way the devotee makes it as nice as he can with the hopes that Krishna will like it. So then he feels a little excitement. This is the beginning of love. We may not be, you know, swooning in prema bhakti, you know, with crying, shivering, and our hair standing up on end, fainting and so forth. But at least there should be some feeling of excitement for Krishna being pleased, and that is the beginning of our love and devotion. So one might question the Lord, so will you refuse an offering made to you by a devotee of some other deity? And the Lord answers, yes, I will refuse to eat it. He doesn't eat or accept the offerings of those who are bhaktas of Mahadev or Devi or Surya or Ganesh. That one has to be a devotee of Krishna. Otherwise, why will he accept it? And actually, the word prayatatmana means that the person is a purified soul. He has a clean heart with no other desires. That is bhakti. So Krishna says, I'm not hungry, but the devotion is the appetizer which creates my appetite. And a devotee's mood of love makes me eat the food. Otherwise, I'm not hungry. But that mood, a clean heart with no other desires other than to please me, that is the appetizer that creates my appetite. That is bhakti. And prayatatmana also means that the devotee should be in a clean state. If a devotee is in an impure state, then Krishna won't accept the offering. Because it also indicates that there's no devotion. Right? If you go to the toilet, then you go make an offering and you don't wash yourself, then there's no devotion. So then Krishna won't accept it. And Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur explicitly or clearly states that when a female devotee is in her monthly period, then Krishna does not accept this offering. He says this in his commentary. So the ladies, when they're on that impure state, they're not to make offerings because Krishna won't accept it. Of course, you can find some statements by Prabhupada when they asked him, and in a case of emergency, and of the ladies being told by an authority, under some circumstance, perhaps the Lord will accept it. Like this, if this is the order of, like Prabhupada one time, he said like that. But in general, the rule is no. So Krishna says, Ashnami, I eat it. I eat, or I accept that those things, the leaf, fruit, flower, or water, it's offered with love. Ashnami means I eat. So it indicates that Krishna also eats the flower, although it's meant to be smelled, because he's bewildered in ecstatic love because of his devotee. He also eats the flower. So you see how Krishna feels love for his devotee also, not just that the devotee feels love for Krishna. And Krishna feels bewildered and makes a mistake by eating the flower also. So this is also to be considered a reply to Sudama Vipra's anxiety that his offering was ill-considered and unfit to be offered to the Lord. Because Sudama would consider, that is some paltry chip rice which is rotten and has a bad smell. How can I offer this to the Lord? But the word bhaktya, as we said, it indicates that Krishna doesn't accept the external quality of the offering itself, but the mood in which it's offered in. So therefore, Sudama was an anxiety, and he might have had this question in his mind. So this is a reply to Sudama also. Yes, it can. But anyway, that's what Vishwanath Chakravarti's comment is, that the devotee cannot be in an impure state. I mean, the principle is in Ragamarg that the person kind of either forgets or is unaware of the standards of cleanliness, and then he makes an offering. Like the example of Shabari. She was actually biting into this bear fruit, or you call boar fruit, I guess, right? And then, because it's when it's ripe, it's sweet. But when it's unripe, it's quite bitter. So she was placing the sweet ones in the basket. Then when Lord Ram came, she, with tears in her eyes and a heart full of love, she offered these. But she didn't know. That's what Shabari means, is like a, you know, a forest dweller, right? So she was unaware of the standards of cleanliness, so she offered that, and Lord Ram accepted it because she had such deep love. And of course, there's the example of Vidura, who offered the Lord the skin of the banana and threw the banana away, and then offered the Lord the skin, and he was trembling in love, and tears were falling down his cheeks. And he didn't even notice that he made a mistake. And he was just staring at the beautiful lotus eyes of Lord Krishna, offering him the skin, and Krishna was accepting it and started biting into the skin and ate the skin of the banana. So if the person is on such a high level and he's unaware, then yeah, he may get away with that. There's also a kind of traditional story that Sanatana Goswami was going daily to Mathura, and he would see, he was going there to beg, and he would see Krishna, and Krishna would be playing with his friends. And Krishna was with some boys, and they were playing Huli Danda. And then Huli Danda. And so the boy, with Krishna's friend, lost. So then he said, okay, now you have to carry me. So he lifted up Krishna and carried him. So then they were playing again and Krishna lost. So then the boy said, now you have to carry me. And Krishna said, oh no, I'm not going to carry you. He said, yes, you must. No, Krishna ran away. The boy chasing him with a stick. And they're running. They went up into, Krishna ran up the steps of some temple and hid behind some columns. And the boy came up, running up there shouting, I'll get you, you rascal, I'll get. And then the pujari came, hey boy, what are you doing? Come out, get out of here. And he chased him out. And Krishna was looking from behind the column and laughing. The boy was like, I'll get you. Then the next day, Sanatana Goswami, he came again and he saw that that boy's mother was cooking for Krishna and his friend. And she had a big pot of khichdi. And she was, it was in the morning, she was cooking the khichdi. But she was like, hadn't bathed yet even, but she was cooking the khichdi. She had some stick and she was cleaning her mouth. And then with the stick she was mixing the khichdi. And Sanatana Goswami said, Are Mata, what are you doing? This is the Supreme Bhagavan. You're cooking for him and you're putting your uchishta in the khichdi. It's very... And you, have you taken your bath? No. You cannot do like this. And look at this. It's so terrible, please. She said, all right. That's right. I shouldn't do. Yes, you have to get a new pot. You should buy some spoon and don't... It's very bad. Yes. All right. So then the next day he came again. He saw that the lady had a nice pot and the proper spoon. She had bathed and she was cooking. But then Krishna was like this, waiting. And never. So then he understood that actually Krishna was enjoying the spontaneous bhavana of the lady, even though she was mixing her toothbrush in the kitchen. So there's different levels, but at the same time, you look in Chaitanya Charitamrita, and the man was bringing these coconuts, right? And they just touched the top. And then the pujari said, throw them all out. They're all useless. They're all contaminated. They were still in the basket, and just because they came close to the top where the foot dust was, because the foot dust would rise and stick to the, you know, to the top of the doorway, and like one of the coconuts just came close to that, and then he said, "Throw that all out. It's all useless." So for the sadhaka, then he has to follow in this way. Because for him, that's his bhakti. You know, the strict cleanliness, being on time, offering the best fruits, something seen by an animal should be thrown away, etc. You know. So all of those, that for us is our bhakti. For those on Ragamarg or Bhavamarg or some higher level, for them, their devotion is expressed in a different way, and it may supersede some of the many of the regulations that we follow in our Vaidhi sadhana. So I can only assume that the statements Prayatatmana, the pure soul, indicates the external cleanliness for the Vaidhi sadhaka, or for someone who, at least you can say, who's aware of the rules and regulations. And the person is so intoxicated by bhava and prema, or doesn't even, is completely unaware of these things, and still has such mood of intense love, then that person has the purity is within the heart, and not Krishna doesn't mind the external transgressions in that case. But that's a different case. So we should make a distinction between these two different levels. We know that the son of Mukunda Das, Raghunandan, who was a young boy, he was also making offerings. His father had to go away because he was a vaidya, and he had to do some house calls. So he instructed his young boy, who might have been, 7 or 8 years old perhaps, to make the offerings to their, Gopinath deity. And in Shrikanda, right, this Raghunandan. So he told his son how to make the offerings, then he left. He said, I'll be back in tomorrow or the couple days. And you continue with the puja. He said, yes, father. So every day he would come, cut up some fruits, put it on the plate, bring it before his Thakurji, and we ring the bell, chant some mantra. But then Thakurji was just standing like this. So the boy was thinking that Krishna should actually eat the food. So then he started saying, cow, cow, eat, eat. And the deity didn't move. So then Raghunandan began to cry. And he said, cow, cow, cow. And he was so much in anxiety that, please eat, please eat. And then with so much devotion he was offering, the deity actually sat down. He started eating the fruit. And he felt peaceful. Okay, now everything's okay. Otherwise he was afraid, what will my father think? And what will he do if he comes back? And if you don't eat it, I'll be in trouble. So then that continued every day. And then that night again, and the next morning, he came and he would bring some sweets and ladu and cut some fruit and bring it there, ring the bell. And the deity would just, stand there, was just... And then the young boy would cry and plead with him, please, please, eat, 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 please. My father will come and what will he say? You don't want my offerings? And then the deity, okay, calm and actually sit down and start eating the food. Then the boy was very happy, okay, everything's nice. So then the father came home, and he said, so there's some prasadam? And the boy said, prasadam? What do you mean? He said, what's left, the remnants of the offering? He said, no, he ate everything I offered. The father said, really? I said, yes, he offered everything. Said, right, okay. Well, why don't you just make another offering and hopefully he'll leave something for me this time, I said, all right, father, I'll make the offering. So he went in the kitchen, cut up some, brought some ladu, brought the plate. The father went outside. He was looking through the window behind some bushes, looking. And the boy rang the bell, chanted the mantras. He was again pleading the deity, please, cow, cow, cow. And then he came and sat down, started to eat. The father was, look. Oh my God. it's Gopinath, he's moving. And he ran inside. And the Gopinath quickly. And then took his and the father came and he just fell at his son's feet. He was begging him, you know. You're a pure devotee. How could you make the Bhagavan came and actually, yes, father, he's eight, just like you told me to do. So Mahaprabhu asked later on, said, who is actually the father, you or Raghunandan? And Mukundadas said, he's actually my father. Mahaprabhu was very happy. He said, yes, this is good. Because Raghunandan was a very, very special devotee. So Krishna was actually eating the offerings. And of course, you know there's so many leelas and Vrindavan, you know, how the devotee eats the food. So these are verses of pure devotion. Satatam kirtayanto mam, 9:14. Ananyas chintayanto mam, 9:22. And this patram pushpam palam toyam. These are all about ananya bhakti. So Krishna's glorifying. How simple it is. If one just has this mood of devotion in the heart, then the process becomes so simple. Person can just pick a leaf or one flower and just make the offering, and that can actually bring him back to Godhead. Prabhupada said in Radha Damodara, there was this old lady, she was bringing water from the Jamuna for the puja of Radha Damodara every day, every morning. And he said, just for that service, she'll go back to Godhead. So she was offering water. One bucket. You know, or one lota. But she was doing it with love, and she did it for many years, early in the morning, every day, without fail, she would go to the Jamuna and get the water. And this. So now Arjuna says, my dear sir, you've explained many types of bhakti and different types of devotees, but which one should I follow? What is my qualification? So Krishna now says, at present, you're unable to give up karma and jnana completely, Arjuna. So you're not qualified for ananya bhakti, kevala bhakti. But at the same time, you don't have to perform sakam karma because your adhikar is higher than that. So you should perform devotion which is somewhere in the middle. Right? So on Gita Mrita, I just said become madhyam bhakti, but actually, the technical term is a technical Sanskrit term, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, or Vishwanath Chakravarti mentions. It's called Nishkam Karma Gyan Mishra Pradhani Bhuta Bhakti. It means devotion which is mixed with Nishkam Karma and Gyan. So this verse is neither a Keval Bhakti, nor is it Nishkam Karma. Generally, it's expressed as Nishkam Karma Yoga. But it's different. No, I'll explain it. Yad karoshi yarashnasi yajjahosi dadasi yat yat tapasyasi kaunteya tat kurushva mad arpanam. Whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer or give away, and whatever austerities you perform, do that, O son of Kunti, as an offering to me. Prabhupada writes, thus it is the duty of everyone to mold his life in such a way that he will not forget Krishna in any circumstance. So this is a very practical instruction, as Krishna is acting as the Gurudev of Arjuna. Since that Arjuna is a family man, kshatriya, so he's recommending that he perform his usual duties, but that he try to think of everything as an offering to Krishna. So the difference is that in bhakti, you offer or surrender first, and then you act. But here Krishna says, whatever you're already doing, whatever you're already eating, then at the end you make the offering to me. Something that you're doing anyway. So that's lower than bhakti, because bhakti first you surrender and you make your offering before you perform the activity. And your very life is an offering. Every breath, every thought, that's offered to Krishna. But in Nishkam Karma, there's this, you're doing something, and then at the end you make the offering, as like a kind of remnant offering. But still, in Nishkam Karma, there's generally the people, they just offer Vedic activities, not common daily activities. That is more. This is, he's saying something which is more commonly done. Whatever you do. See, in Karma Yoga, they don't offer just anything you do. Not worldly activities, only like Vedic activities, like a yajna and so forth. Oh, you mean but the fruits of their work they offer, yeah, in Karma Yoga. Yeah, separately. But this is like any kind of daily activity that you're doing. So that is something different. See, that's kind of like in bhakti. It's closer to bhakti, because in bhakti, every breath you offer, you take a shower, you put on tilak, everything you actually do, you go to sleep, you're doing that for Krishna. You're eating for Krishna. Like this. So all of those activities can be offered in bhakti. So this verse is kind of like in between Nishkam Karma and bhakti. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur calls it Nishkam Karma, Jnana Mishra, Pradhani Bhuta Bhakti. That's the technical term. In our philosophy, there's many gray areas. And first we learn that there's bhakti, there's karma yoga. Then we learn there's also in karma yoga, there's sakam and nishkam. And then there's something in between nishkam karma and bhakti also. And there's different kinds of bhakti. So there's many fine lines. And Balaji Vidyabhushan's commentary, he describes three other kinds of terms. He says sanishta, parinishta, and nirapeksha bhakti. So he describes Krishna's telling Arjuna to do the parinishta bhakti, or sometimes called parinishtita bhakti. So sanishta is when one puts his swadharma in the forefront. That's the primary activity, and the devotional activities are somewhat on the back burner. Yeah. Let me explain this paradigm first, and otherwise we'll get lost. So sanishta bhakti means when someone puts bhakti in the back, and his occupational duties are in the front. Those are primary for him. Then parinishtita or parinishta bhakti is when the bhakti is in the front, the primary activities. The person also performs his swadharma occupational duties, but they're secondary in his list of priority. And then the nirapeksha bhakti is the renounced person that doesn't perform any worldly duties. The ascetic, the sannyasi, etc., the Paramahamsa. So, Baladeva Vidyabhushan mentions these terms are also mentioned by Jiva Goswami in his Sandarbhas, and Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, I believe, mentions them later in the 18th chapter. So, Krishna is telling Arjuna that, yes, you, mama nusmara yudhyacha. Think of me, bhakti first, and your swadharma is secondary. So that would correspond with Baladeva's commentary and his explanation of this. And I would think that we should try to encourage our congregational members to come to the parinishtita level. That they should perform their swadharma, but the bhakti should be the first and foremost thing on their list of priorities, their puja, their chanting, their Bhagavad reading, the coming to the temple. Like Prabhupada's father, right, he also did his work. He was a cloth merchant, right? Gormohande. So he would come to his shop maybe 11 o'clock, open for a few hours, then around 2 or 3 he would go home, right? And then he would just do puja and chanting and reading Gita and Mahabharata and Ramayana, so many things, right? So he did some work and he kept the family alive, but just like, he didn't, if you asked him, what, you know, who are you, what are you, he wouldn't say, I'm a cloth merchant. He said, I'm a devotee of Krishna. Or what do you do? Oh, I have some business, you know. I do for a few hours, you know, like this. Like we hear how he would put the bowl of rice out so that the rats would eat the rice, not the cloth, right? So he did his work, but his main focus was that he's a Krishna Bhakta. So at least it seems that it would be good we encourage our congregational members to think like that, because then if they have that conception, that's much closer to Kevala Bhakti than Sanishta. And they can still perform their duties, and there's no discrepancy, and nobody can criticize them. Right? It's interesting. Now, you had some point you wanted to? About Yad Karoshi? This verse describes that whatever you're already doing, you do that and make it an offering to me. So, but bhakti is when you, right from the beginning, you already considered that this is already offered to Krishna. My life, my words, my work, my money, everything belongs to Krishna, right? But in the lower level, the person does this. He thinks, this is my work. This is the food that I'm eating. This is my money, and I'll offer this to the Lord. So there's still some false ego. That there's some separate kind of mentality. The devotee feels that my life belongs to the Lord. Like this, so he doesn't. He's thinking of the Lord always, constantly, everything he does. As everything to him is an offering to the Lord. But this devotee, on this level, he's doing something as his own activity, and then at the end, he makes an offering to kind of purify the atmosphere, to purify the activity. This. Nishkam karma is more or less in the mode of goodness. So there's still some mentality of like self-purification and some kind of separate, my identity and Krishna's identity, somewhat separate. In the mode of goodness, it's the best mode, but still it's not nirgun or kevala bhakti.
Here it is concerned in nirgun
Brahma. No. This is it's close to nishkam karma. But it's higher because it's like everything you do, make an offering, not just official offerings.
That is nishkam karma, it's official offerings.
Yes. Only Vedic regulated offerings. But here Krishna is saying everything you do. Whatever you do. And make an offering. That's why it's kind of pitched between nishkam karma and kevala bhakti. Something, there's some mix there. It's pradhani bhuta bhakti. Because if somebody can't do patram pushpam, then he can do this. Because Arjuna is asking, okay, you told me, since you mentioned artha jigyasa artharti gyanicha, from chapter 7, you mentioned different kinds of devotees and different kinds of levels of bhakti. So which one should I follow? So this is a specific direction to Arjuna for his level. Krishna is his Gurudev, so he's telling him, you do like this. This right in the middle between Nishkam Karma and Keval Bhakti. Because he said, right now, you don't have the adhikar to do Keval Bhakti. You're not completely free from all karma, jnana, and yoga. So you must do like this.
Like Nishkam Karma Yoga, we say that one is attached to the work, not the result. Like that. But
In Nishkam Karma, right. Yeah.
But specially bhakti means that he is not attached to work also, because he is acting just for the pleasure of spiritual master.
Right.
Like that. So this comes in that category.
What, this verse?
Parinishthana, this verse. It's not a natural, it's out of love, he's not doing. Maybe out of sense of duty, okay. You are telling that my life belongs to Krishna, so anything I should do is as often like that.
It's very close to that. You're saying, you're describing Keval Bhakti, saying that this is Keval Bhakti, but it's close. It's different, it's higher than Nishkam Karma, but it's a little bit lower than Keval Bhakti. Because it says that whatever you're like already doing in your life, then you do that and make that an offering to me. So in Keval Bhakti, it's like you make the surrender and the offering and the, you know, in your mind, the sankalpa, like first, this is all yours, now I'm doing this for you, now I do it. But in the lower levels, the person thinks, I'm doing this, this is my activities, and then at the end, yes, for you, my Lord, some part of that for you.
So
then it can be pure bhakti. If he had no intention of doing any business, and the guru says, you start a business and you give all the money to me, then it could, then it's pure bhakti. If he's doing it with that motive, yeah. But Krishna's also the guru, and he's telling him something which isn't on the highest level, because he sees that the disciple is not ready to do the highest thing. So just because the guru tells you doesn't mean that it's Keval Bhakti. Because the guru may see that he's attached to wealth and he needs some separate existence, independence, and like that. And he may say, right, immediately. Krishna said that you're not on that, you don't have that adhikar.
What is the consciousness of self separate?
Right, and his activities are separate. It's his work, and it's his result. And I'm going to take, like, I get $100 from my work at the end of the week, and Krishna, I'm going to offer $25 or $50 to you. This is for you, my gift to you, my offering, like that. So there's some separate. He thinks this is mine, and I'm giving it to Bhagavan. But the devotee thinks that all this money belongs to Bhagavan. And this work is his also. And my body and my mind and my everything already belongs to him. So he just thinks of, so now what does Bhagavan want? How does he want this money spent? So it's already, it's not like he makes some kind of separate offering. Just like devotees that go in Sankirtan, they come back, they don't go before the deity with the money and say, oh, Raghut Kunja Bihari Swaha, and dump the money on the altar in a bag. No, they just, because from the very beginning, right, the first step they took off from the property, they know that I'm collecting money and it's all Krishna's. So that's why they don't have to come back and go like this, right? They just come and they give it to Ramananda. Here you go, Haribo. Ramananda says, okay, how many books did you do? Yes. Like this. I could just say bhakti mixed with nishkam karma and jnana. It's like that. That's Arjuna's platform, parinishtita. Yeah, another word for him. His primary concern is to do his duty for Bhagavan and to get purified so that he can, you know, attain the goal of life. That's exactly, Krishna was telling you, your adhikar is to do karma to Arjuna, right? The same thing. This is another direct instruction from the guru to the disciple. This verse is Krishna telling Arjuna, Arjuna, your adhikar is to do karma. You're not ready to do jnana and go into the forest. So you have to do your duty. That was the first thing he told him, just to stop him from running off into the forest, right? And now later Krishna's talking about bhakti, and now he's telling him, okay, now you do like this. You know, you think of me, make an offering, do your duty. That's on the back burner. The main thing is that mama nusmara and yudhyacha, right? But the things that you're already doing, then you do them and make an offering to me. You try to think of me like this. That's nishkam karma, young. Yeah. Don't be attached to the fruits of your work. So that was like the first thing that he told him, to at least clear away that all this stuff. So Arjuna is going, doing nishkam karma, but now Krishna's talking about doing bhakti. So he's saying you do this kind of bhakti which is mixed with nishkam karma. So he's refining it. He's filing, you know, like fine-tuning Arjuna's direction. That's what the guru's job is to do. In the beginning he may tell one thing, then gradually another. But it's all consistent with Arjuna's mentality and with the philosophy. It's unfolding. You know. You're not the cause of the fruit. He says, you're not the cause of the fruit. Don't be attached to the fruit of your work and don't just give up your duty. Right? Because that's, you know, for nishkam karma, that's the main thing, is the attachment to the fruit. If the person thinks, I'm the cause, I'm the doer, and this is my money, why should I give it away? So he's trying to give, you know, I mean, there's a lot of jnana in the first six chapters, and Krishna is saying that there's, you know, there's, other than you, there are other factors. And so you should be willing to be detached from the fruit of your work, because you're just do it as a duty, and the result is been given by higher authorities. So that's a good reason to be detached, to give the fruit of the work. But nonetheless, still nishkam karma, there's that mentality is you know, it's still there. It's like a remnant, it's dangling. And the person thinks that this is my work, this is my fruit. I shouldn't be attached to the fruit because, yeah, that's right. I will offer and sacrifice. And gradually, as he comes closer to bhakti and to higher levels, then it becomes very easy for him to separate himself. Right? He doesn't see himself as a separate entity. He's part and parcel of the Supreme. He's a servant of the Supreme. His will and God's will are the same. So he just works, and then whatever God wants him to, you know, how he wants him to direct those energies and those results, and he's already accepted that totally. All right, let's go on now, because I don't want to go too far on this. The next verse is just describing the results of this mentality. Shubha shubha phaler evam moksha se karma bandhanai sanyasa yoga yuktatma vimukto mamukpasyasi. In this way, you will be freed from bondage to work and its auspicious and inauspicious results. With your mind fixed on me, in this principle of renunciation, you will be liberated and come to me. Prabhupada writes, one who acts in Krishna consciousness under superior direction is called yukta. So the word is yoga yukta. Right? Sannyasa yoga yuktatma. Prabhupada says the technical term is yukta vairagya. And he quotes Rupa Goswami's famous verse about yukta vairagya. So we're working in the world, we cannot stop acting. But if those actions are performed and the fruits are given to Krishna, then that is called yukta vairagya. So here, sannyas means offering the fruits of the work, offering the fruits of one's work to the Lord. Actually situated in renunciation, such activities clear the mirror of the mind, and as the actor gradually makes progress in spiritual realization, he becomes completely surrendered to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, at the end, he becomes liberated, and this liberation is also specified. Because the word vi, mukta, means vishesha, mukta, mukti. Means that this person is special. Amongst those who are liberated, he's special. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, he not only becomes liberated, but he achieves vimukti. He becomes exceptional among those already liberated. And he comes to me in order to serve me directly. And Vishwanath Chakravarti quotes, muktanam apisiddhanam narayana parayana sadulabha prashantatma kotishvapi mahamune. So amongst the various siddhas, the liberated persons, one may be the devotee of Narayan. And he is a rare person who is very peaceful. So Prabhupada says, by this liberation, he does not become one with Brahma-jyoti, but rather enters into the planet of the Supreme Lord. It is mentioned here, mam upaishasi, comes to me, back home, back to Godhead. And so there's five kinds of mukti, but here he's talking about direct contact with the Lord, back to Godhead, and engage directly in the association of the Supreme Lord. That's what vimukti means. Vimukto mam upashasi. This is a special meaning. Prabhupada clarifies that anyone who has no interest but to dedicate his life to the service of the Lord is actually a sannyasi. Such a person always thinks of himself as an eternal servant, dependent on the supreme will of the Lord. So that's a real sannyasi. That's the meaning of sannyas. Because you have your body, mind, and words, you're dedicated to the Lord. That's the tridanda. I think there's another translation of shubha. Because you don't want to be free from auspicious, I guess, but I think before it was something different. I don't know, they change the words sometimes. Be free to bondage to work? Yes, in its auspicious and inauspicious results. Yes. In this process of what? Avyat Karoshi. In Nishkam Karma Yoga. Or in what we're talking about here. Well, there's more attraction than the Nishkam Karmi. Because it's not just during the formal offerings, but he's offering everything that he does. At least he's being recommended to do that. And if he does it, then that means that, you know, throughout the whole day he's remembering the Lord. He's offering things to the Lord. So that is bhakti, but it's just mixed, a little bit mixed. So there's attraction, there's some bhakti there. Keval uttam bhakti is not there yet, not yet. There's some attraction and there's some feeling of dedication.
And,
well, we can try. That is, because those are all bhakti, right? Because you can be doing uttam bhakti even in the kanishta level, right? Because Rupa Goswami states that there's six symptoms of pure devotion. And the first two are kleshagni, right? And subhada, right? So those happen in the neophyte stage. So that means that the person's doing uttam bhakti, he's free from you know, material miseries, and his life is made auspicious. Right? So that indicates that uttam bhakti can be performed in the kanishta level. But what was your question again? So you want to hear like some... Well, okay, we can make some comparison, because if he's nishkam karma is mainly the mode of goodness, and we know that bhaktir bhavati naishtaki is done tada rajastamo bhava kama loba dareshchaya, right? Evam prasanna manaso bhagavat bhakti yogatha bhagavat tatva vigyan mukta sangasya jayate. This level is above the modes of passion and ignorance. And the person comes to sattvam, what is it? Stitam sattve prasiddhati, right? So he becomes happy in the mode of goodness, that's at nishta. So if we're going to make some comparison according to the gunas, then we can say that nishkam karma would be like a purified state, like at nishta, nishta bhakti. There are some similarities, if one is allowed to draw these kind of parallels. So it's not you know, and it's a significant level of advancement, this kind of, this level of bhakti. Which second one? Yeah, nishkam karma. Well, I guess maybe closer to ruchi, something like that. Something. I mean, nishta itself has different stages. So, but when we make these kind of comparisons, we have to always remember that, you know, from shraddha all the way to prema, that's all bhakti. So that's all higher than any kind of other yoga. Right. No, I'm saying that from shraddha to prema, that's all bhakti. It can be considered all uttam bhakti, kevil bhakti. So if we make these comparisons, it's kind of at a risk that someone may misconceive this whole idea, right? Now if the person comes, because jnana is also with detachment and knowledge, so that it's also like jnana yoga could be considered, you know, ruchi or asakti, something. And yoga is like asakti and bhava. Asamadhi is like level of bhava. And then bhakti is prema bhakti. You could draw conclusions. There are some similarities at these stages. But when doing this, it's at a risk that the people you're talking to may misunderstand what, and they may think that, oh, so, you know, nishkam karma is equal with the devotee at nishta. It's not true. There are only some philosophical similarities. So, Baladeva Nibhushan, he says, offer all these to me. If you act in this way, it will be good example for others, and I'll definitely bless you. Krishna is telling Arjuna, you offer all these to me, and if you act in this way, it will be a good example for others, and I will definitely bless you. Okay, next verse. Samoham sarva bhuteshu na me dveshosti na priyaha Ye bhajanti tu mam bhaktya mai te te shuchapyaham. I envy no one, nor am I partial to anyone. I am equal to all. But whoever renders service unto me in devotion is a friend, is in me, and I am also a friend to him. So Prabhupada writes that one may question here that if Krishna is equal to everyone and no one is his special friend, then why does he take a special interest in the devotees or engaged in his transcendental service? But there is no discrimination. It is natural. Any man in this material world may be very charitably disposed, yet he has special interest in his own children. The Lord claims that every living entity, in whatever form, is his son, and so he provides everyone with a generous supply of necessities of life. He is just like a cloud which pours rain all over, regardless of whether it falls on rock, land, or water. But for his devotees, he gives special attention. Such devotees are mentioned here. They are always in Krishna consciousness, and therefore they are always transcendentally situated in Krishna. So Arjuna says, before this verse is spoken, that oh, you deliver your devotees and bring them to you. Does it mean that you are partial? That you have raga and dvesha in you? Attachment and envy? And then Krishna says, no, I envy no one. And I'm not partial to anyone. I'm equal to everyone. But one who renders service to me in devotion is a friend and is in me, and I am a friend to him. So Krishna says, so why only devotees? I am in everything, and everything is in me. Devotees are attached to me, but others, they have no dealings with me. Although I am present, for them, I don't exist. So naturally, Krishna deals with them in a different way. So this is like more than yayatamam prapadyante. Because here, he reciprocates more with those who love him. And some devotees express that the first half of the verse is referring to the Paramatma mood of the Lord, who is like a desire tree, Kalpa Vriksha. And then the second half is his Bhagavan feature. Because the super soul is quite equal. He is not he's impartial. Anyone who comes to the super soul is maintaining everyone, whether they're pious, impious, whether devotees or non-devotees. He's giving them intelligence, he's giving them inspiration, even the animals, giving them direction where to go, where to find food, which direction to fly in the north, the south, in the winter. So the Kalpa Vriksha tree just gives everyone whatever they want. And it's not particularly attached or in love with those who come. Nor are the persons that come to the tree, particularly in love with the Kalpa Vriksha tree. They're just there to get what they want. You know. So there's kind of equal distribution in this kind of mood. Like the super soul is like that. But Bhagavan's a little bit different. Because Krishna, he becomes particularly, he falls in love with his devotees. So he's actually, he does more for the devotees. He becomes angry if somebody attacks his devotee or insults his devotee. But the super soul is not like that. It's just like equal to everyone. Let everyone fight, okay, it doesn't matter. And you know, super soul doesn't get very upset about this. But Krishna, he becomes angry, just like Haranyakashipu is torturing his son. Prabhupada actually quotes from the Nisringa Purana here, I believe. Is it here or maybe that's in the next verse. See, Hiranyakashipu is attacking his son, and then Krishna becomes angry and comes to kill him. That's partiality, but it's based on love for his devotee. When Duryodhan invited the Lord to have supper with him, and the Lord refused. He said, whoever's envious of the Pandavas and is their enemy, he's also envious of me. And he's my enemy. So that showed a very clear partiality. Yeah. But as far as Krishna is concerned, he was quite fair with Duryodhan. He was willing to, you know, kind of make a deal with him. It wasn't that Krishna hated Duryodhana in particular. That Krishna allows everyone, gives everyone a chance, and reciprocates with everyone according to, you know, their level. But if that person, you know, hates his devotees or attacks his devotees, then Krishna goes further. Now he actually avoids that person or doesn't accept the invitations of that person. Prabhupada, in a lecture, he said, Krishna reciprocates with any devotee who is constantly engaged. If you do a little thing for the service of Krishna, it is noted in Krishna's notebook. Don't think that it's going in vain. Whatever you're doing is noticed and noted down. So Krishna's compared to the rain, and trees absorb rain water and then grow fruits. So some trees produce bitter fruits and some trees produce sweet fruits. But that is not the fault of the rain. The rain is just coming to all of the trees. Right? Does it mean that the rain is partial? No, it's according to the tree. The tree is growing some bitter fruits. Some trees have bitter fruits, some have sweet fruits. So regardless of a living entity's situation, Krishna nourishes everyone equally. So in that way, he's neutral, he's partial, he's impartial. Prabhupada writes, this transcendental reciprocation exists because both the Lord and the devotee are conscious. When a diamond is set in a golden ring, it looks very nice. The gold is glorified, and at the same time, the diamond is glorified. The Lord and the living entity eternally glitter, and when the living entity becomes inclined to the service of the Supreme Lord, he looks like gold. The Lord is a diamond, and so this combination is very nice. Prabhupada also describes the desire tree example in his last paragraph. So in the spiritual world, spiritual life, is everything is dynamic and personal. So it's acceptable that Krishna has feelings for his devotees, and he may become angry as his devotees attacked. That's actually part of his bhakta vatsal, which is his paramaishwarya, his highest opulence, is that he falls in love with his devotees. And we see that demonstrated further in the next verse, because in the next verse he describes how he's willing to accept his devotee, even if the devotee commits some abominable action. Right. Right. Well, that's why there's these two things. See, the word two in this verse means but. Like Krishna says, I'm partial, but when you become my devotee, then I become partial. As you say, right? When Vibhishan came, then he said that anyone who says from this day forward, my Lord, that I am, my life belongs to you. He said, this person, I give him fearlessness, and this is my vow to anyone who comes. He said, you don't understand. He's telling the monkeys that even if Ravan comes, then I will accept him as my devotee. They were like shocked. Even Ravan. Because they were saying, don't trust Vibhishan, you know. He's a Rakshasa, we have to keep him. And Hanuman said, when I, you know, Ram said, Hanuman, what do you think? He said, when I Hanuman said, when I was traveling to Lanka to burn the city, then I went into all the different places, all the buildings, to set them on fire. And I looked in one window, and there I saw this Vibhishan, and he was doing puja to a deity of Ram. Said, he's not an ordinary Rakshasa. He's a devotee. And they all, they were very impressed. Then Ram said, yes, he's my devotee. I accept him. So this, the word too, means that this partiality of Bhakta Vatsalya is always an ornament. It's not a defect. It's an additional aspect of his partiality. Yeah, but it's an ornament on, it's like a cherry on top of his impartiality, which means he loves his devotee. Because Krishna went to take that, to eat the banana skin of Vidura, instead of going to Vidura, the Duryodhana's feast, right? And Krishna much preferred to be with his devotee and eat simple food than to go to the house of Duryodhana to eat the feast. But if Duryodhana became a devotee, then he would go.